Quinnell, reel 14.
In this, your first experience of going over the top, could you describe for me in a little more detail the sequence of events which took place, beginning from where you were informed by your officers that the attack was going to take place, how you were organized and what your feelings were and things like that? And what I'm really interested in was, what was it like to go over the top? What did you feel about it?
Well, by this time, you know, we were professionals. And to us, it was just a job of work. There was no real excitement about it. You see, you'd seen death so many times, you'd seen wounded so many times, blood didn't excite you. You became professionals.
Mm-hmm. Right. A couple of questions about Hairpin Trench at Hallock, where you were serving. What was the hairpin like as a trench?
Just imagine a lady's hairpin, or a long finger, we'll put it that way, a finger which stuck out into the German lines. It was enfiladed. It was about, all told, it was about 250 yards long. It was a salient. That's the correct army expression. It was a salient. But it was like a woman's hairpin. And the idea was it went over the brow of a rising piece of ground, and therefore our artillery could come up to the end of it and observe behind the German lines.
What were conditions like in it while you
were there? It was hell. You had to put up with enfilade fire, Minenwerfer, that was a trench mortar. It was 2'6" in height, 11 inches in diameter, and when that exploded, then the accuracy of these things was something to marvel at. They always fell either on the parapet or right bang in the trench.
Was this the first time you'd experienced?
Yes, it was. And
what was it like? I mean, you know, the sound and appearance and how.
Well, you heard a plop when the Germans sent it off. They used to send it off from a deep trench, and you heard a plop. It wasn't like the usual sound of gunfire, just a plop, loud plop. And then you would look up, and then you would see this missile coming over to you. And in the daylight, it was a simple thing to dodge them, because you had 15 seconds or so to get out of the way. And you used to put a couple of bays between that Minenwerfer and you when you saw it coming over. The only thing at night time was all you heard the plop, and you saw a trail of sparks in the air, and you couldn't place which way it was falling, and you simply stood there and prayed.
Mm. What were casualties like?
Casualties were these trench mortars caused more casualties, more casualties than shell fire.
Mm. What were the weather conditions like when you were in Hairpin?
Well, it is now October, and we were in and out of the Hairpin right the way from October, right the way up till the following May.
Yes. Well, what were the weather conditions like in the
trenches? In the winter time, the soil there was clay, and in parts chalk. But the weather, as the weather deteriorated, so the trenches got more and more sodden with water, until if you had a long period of rain, the trenches just became ditches. And that's where the thigh boots that we were issued with came in very, very handy. Ordinary Wellington boots weren't high enough. Mm. The water would come over the top of them. Mm.
Did you have much trouble with trenches collapsing?
Oh, yes. After, if you got a long period of rain, all the sides of the trench would come in without the slightest warning, and they would all slip to the bottom of the trench, and that meant that as soon as it stopped raining, you were busy repairing that bit of trench with sandbags.
Mm. Was it not possible to repair them while it was still raining?
Well, it was liquid mud, you see. By the time they'd slithered down into the bottom of the trench, into the water, it had turned to mud.
Did these weather conditions create any other problems? I'm thinking, for example, about problems of sleeping.
You slept by sitting on the fire step. You'd try and find a dry sandbag to sit on, and you'd sit there. Would you put your overcoat over your head and try and make a tent of it, and you'd huddle down under that sitting down. But it was a very, very broken sleep.
What about preparation of food in the front line under these conditions?
Well, that was the biggest hardship. You couldn't make a brew up, because the wood which you carried into the trench got absolutely sodden, and that was the real hardship. The one thing we used to look forward to, and that was every night we had an issue of rum all the way through the winter. And that was very, very acceptable.
How was that issued?
That used to come up with the rations in a 2-gallon stone jar, and that was given to the company sergeant major. And the company sergeant major used to issue out 4 mess tins to each platoon sergeant. There were 4 platoons in the company. And the platoon sergeant would come along the trench of a night time with a big tablespoon and this mess tin full of rum. And the cry was, open up, and you'd open your mouth up and he'd pour this tablespoonful of rum down your throat.
He'd actually pour it in your throat?
Yeah.
You didn't get it in your own mugs?
No.
Uh-huh. Yes. Fine. Was it possible to get out of the rain and get out of the mud at all while you were actually in the front line?
No.
It wasn't?
No.
Right. When you came out of the trenches at Hulluck, what were your sort of physical condition?
You were very, very tired indeed. And everybody was very quiet. There was no exuberance. And you were marched back to a village. One of our favourite villages was a place called Sailor-le-Bosse. And there was a very good billets in the way of barns. And the relief there was always took place at night time, because there was the whole system of trenches there were overlooked by a fosse known as Fosse 8. That's a slag heap, coal mine slag heap. And all the relief took place in the dark. Mm. The communication trenches there were a mile and a mile and a quarter long. And they were all known as Regent Street or Oxford Street. They always had a London name.
When you came out of the trenches at this time, was there any sort of arrangements laid on for you to dry out?
No. You dried out the best way you could. We used to hang our stuff when we got to this barn, for instance. We would hang our overcoats. And our overcoats were always the bottom of the overcoats, all the way round the bottom. They were now caked with mud, and there would be 2 and 3 inches of mud adhering to your overcoat.
Under these particularly wet conditions, was there a very high incidence of trench feet?
In the early part of the winter, we lost several men with trench feet. And that was their feet being immersed in water. When they took their boots off after coming out of the trenches, their feet used to swell up like balloons. But first of all, in October and November, we were issued with whale oil before going into the trenches. And we have to take our boots off, socks off, rub this whale oil into your feet and up to your knees, in your legs as far as the knees. And it smelt horribly, but it did the trick, all right. It kept the water out.
What about I think before you came out of the hairpin trench at Hulwick, you had your first experience of German mining operations.
Yes. Another one of the annoyances we had in this hairpin was that the Germans were very active with mining. And before going into that part of the line, one of the orders we got was, if the Germans blew a mine, we were to crouch down underneath the parapet to dodge the debris falling, and then as soon as the debris had ceased falling, we were to get the men up on the fire step, open up rapid fire to prevent the Germans from getting into that crater where they could bomb us. Well, sure enough, one night I was the NCO on duty, walking up and down the trench, and then without warning, up went this mine, and the air becomes full of debris. So we crouched down underneath the fire step, underneath the front parapet, and as soon as the debris ceased to fall, I ran along the trench, got the men up on the front line, opened up rapid fire, and this they did. And along came a young subaltern who had just joined us the day before, and he hadn't been told about this trick about the getting up on the fire step and opening up rapid fire. So he said, who gave the order for rapid fire? So somebody told him, Corporal Quinnell. And so he came along to me, he said, are you Corporal Quinnell? He was very angry. I said, yes, sir. He said, did you give the order for rapid fire? I said, yes, sir. He said, consider yourself under open arrest. Well, I was dumbstruck. So he said, now give the order, cease fire and reload. So I ran along the trench, cease fire, reload, cease fire, reload. And of course I was very despondent about it. Later on, the company sergeant major came along and he said, talking to me, I said, I'm under open arrest, sergeant major. So he looked at me and smiled. He said, don't worry, lad, you'll be all right. Well, next, when we were out of the line, somebody came up to me and said, congratulations. I said, what are you congratulating me for? I'm under arrest. He says, no, you're not. You're under orders, in the orders tonight for a promoted Lance Sergeant.
Well, that's a nice story. Now, at the end of the year, you moved from the Hairpin Trench at Hulwick to Givenchy, and it was here that you took part in mining operations yourself.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, 60 men out of each battalion and two senior NCOs were warned off to be labourers for the mining, for the RE mining parties. We were just labourers for them. Now, this job, we were separated from our battalions and we were billeted in French barracks in Bethune, Bethune. And the idea was three parties of 30 men would attend to each mine. There were three mines at Givenchy. They were known as Ducksville 1, Ducksville 2, Ducksville 3. And each...
What were the mines like?
Well, the only... As you walked along the trench, all you saw of the mine was the doorway leading to a staircase. Now, this doorway was made of a wooden frame, 4 feet high, 2 feet wide, and the boards were about a foot wide. So, and then that's all you saw of it. Now, that led to a staircase which went down 30 feet into the ground. That opened up into a room about 8 feet by 8 feet and about 7 feet in height. And in the centre of that room was a 4 feet shaft, 4 feet square. Over the top of it was a wooden windlass and a rope round there. And that shaft went down another 20 feet or so. At the bottom of the shaft, another doorway facing towards the German lines, and that was the entrance to the tunnel. Now, the miners were professional miners.
Yes. What about the shafts themselves, the tunnels themselves?
The tunnels were a continuation of this framework of wood, 4 feet in height, 2 feet in width, and that went straight ahead under the German lines.
So if it was 4 feet high, you would almost be crawling to go along it?
Yes.
Mm. Okay. Now, tell me about the work of tunnelling itself. How was it done?
The man who worked on the face was a professional miner. Now, these lads were miners from... They were taken from mining districts such as Staffordshire, Leicester, Yorkshire, Northumberland, and they were really masterpieces with their tools. Their principal tool was a bayonet, and they would stick that bayonet into the face, and then they'd take work this twist of the wrist, and you'd bring out a big cheese of clay, which was put in the sandbags, passed along the tunnel to the bottom of the windlass that was wound up, and then an endless chain of men took them up the staircase and threw them over the top. Now, this tunnel, every now and again, we would have to stop work and leave one man down there, one of these miner boys, right at the face, and he would sit there on a sandbag with a stethoscope to his ears and the stethoscope pressed up against the wall, and if he could hear the Germans working, you were quite safe. It was when you didn't hear a noise, you knew the Germans were going to blow then.
Did you ever have an opportunity to listen yourself?
Yes. One day I crept up to the chap who was listening, and when you were down below, we had orders to speak in whispers only, and I asked by signs, could I have a listen? He handed the stethoscope to me, and you could very distinctly hear the Germans talking.